you wanted to put this biography together of your father's work of art, various art formations. Explain why you wanted to do this.
For about the past 15 years, I've been working curating the family art collection. That's involved quite a bit of a diversity of tasks, from cataloging, photographing, storing and restoring, building database, website, and occasionally selling paintings as well. And when each of a client would talk about my father, and I'd tell them the story about his life, they always came back with how fascinating the story was. And I realized there was really a need to write some of this stuff down. He had quite an interesting life.
And it started off with editorial cartoons in newspapers, both, I understand it was sports, and then he moved to politics.
Yep. And he trained originally in art school at the Winnipeg College of Art, but ended up becoming a political cartoonist as a way to actually make money from his art during the Depression, which where he more or less started out his career in the midst of the 30s. And going alongside that was he was a very left leaning person, and he was actually a communist, and so he tried to carry on this really dual existence at that time, doing political cartoons for mainstream newspapers while at the same time pursuing an alter ego almost with other cartoons appearing in left wing publications under a pseudonym.
But I understand that got him into a little bit of trouble, and he actually got fired from his job, and that sort of led to a change in the style of art that he would go on to continue to develop.
Exactly. So, I mean, during the 40s and the early 40s and the later part of the war, it was kind of easy for him to cartoon without too much personal conflict, in the sense that the Russians were allied with the West. And it wasn't until really the end of the war that he kind of ran up against some walls, and it was kind of harder and harder for him to find a political line that was easy to publish. There was a point in time where he was the cartoonist out in Sydney, Nova Scotia, where he entertained Tim Buck, who was the leader of the Communist Party, for dinner one night. And when his employer found out about that, they fired him. This was the beginnings of the Cold War. And from then forward, he basically had run out of maneuvering room in terms of the being able to cartoon for a major newspaper. And he retrenched and really restarted his career in another direction.
That's really a big deal, because he went, it must be hard, I would imagine. I've never been there myself, but changing your total way of creating a picture and an art form, from transitioning from cartoon art to scenes. Most of them in the book are from nature scenes, that sort of thing. I wonder if that was a difficult transition for him.
Yeah, and there's actually a bit more to the story in a sense, because it's not just the fact that he lost his job, but as it unfolded later on for the next 10 years or so, as what started to come out from what was really happening in Russia. My father was, very much a committed communist, committed to the Russian model. When what was revealed about what was really going on in the Stalinist era after Stalin died, every communist, my father included, went through this period of inner soul searching, and there was this almost feeling of betrayal from it. And so there was him, along with others in his cohort, went through this kind of change. So for him as an artist, this was a break point as well. He was humiliated by this whole political aspect of his art. And so he retreated inward, and he actually became very connected at that point to what some of his early training, when he was originally studying art. He was studying under L.L. Fitzgerald from the Group of Seven. He was being influenced at that time by some of this, more early movement to actually connect with the land. And that's what came out in him at that point in time. And from there on, he never even put a man-made object in his paintings, barely. It was it's almost exclusively painting nature.
Well, and you can really tell the impression that Fitzgerald left with him as well, as you look through the book and some of these paintings here.
Yes. I mean, the use of color, the way that he interprets nature, and the way that his graphics art background it sort of informs the way he composes a scene, all sort of come together there, and it's almost like it was a release of artistic flowering when he was unconstrained by the politics and unconstrained by the stresses, I guess, of what was going on around him versus what his inner commitments were. When all that was sort of put aside and he was just free to express completely. completely. This is what he really wanted to do, I think, inside.
Even the texturing is rather neat. It almost, I'm looking at the cover right now of the book, and it looks 3D. As I touch it, I think I'm going to feel imprints, you know, of on the picture, but it's just a flat surface.
Yeah. No, it is. Well, and it's quite true. And as a matter of fact, if you have a chance to go to the Cube Gallery, they still have some of the art on display there, even though the show is finished. You'll see that the art is applied, the paint is applied with in a lot of those scenes with a palette knife, very thickly applied paint. It's almost sculptural, and the colors are bright and vivid in there, sometimes outlined, and it makes for a very strong texture. And in particular, when you see them live, too, and they're lit up, you can almost see that contour, a bit of shadow even created by the strong application of the paint.
The book is called A Colorful Life, The Art and Drawing of Josh Silbert. Ellen, is it available in stores right now, apart from the Cube Gallery?
Yes. It's available on Amazon, Chapters. Most of their online facilities are carrying it. Of course, we sell it from the website and directly from the publisher. But the easiest place to get it in town right now is at the Cube Gallery.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for this, Ellen.
Thanks a lot.